Welcome to the Emotions and Money podcast, where we unpack the psychology behind our investment decisions and why our emotions could be sabotaging our financial outcomes. I'm your host, Maya Fisher-French, and I'm joined by Paul Nixon, who is Head of Behavioral Finance at Momentum Investments. And we're going to explain why, when it comes to investing, understanding your money emotions is as important as understanding the investments itself. Now, Paul, today we're going to talk about risk, because I think risk is something we as humans don't actually fully understand. And one of the examples I always think of is the aquarium in Cape Town. So when I go there with my children, there's a big sign up at the shark tank that tells you that more people are killed by toasters and falling off chairs than by sharks. Yet, of course, when we look at a toaster, we aren't filled with absolute fear and dread. And I was thinking back to the previous podcast where we spoke about cortisol and creating that fight or flight in us. And I thought, you know what, when I look at a toaster, my cortisol levels are not going up. When I look at a shark, they definitely are. So maybe there is something in that. But not understanding the consequences of risk, or understanding what risk is, or our risk behavior, I think can lead to very, very poor investment decisions.
Absolutely, yeah. So I think there's so many facets or dimensions, as you've already said, to risk, that when we look at sort of our reactions, our ability, our willingness, you know, all these kind of things are important to understand as we go into financial planning and our investment plans.
Yeah. So what risk should we be looking at? How should we be unpacking risk? You know, like how much risk you like taking versus how much risk you should be taking, how much risk you can afford to take. Unpack how we should be conceptualizing risk.
So yeah, I mean, I think a good place to start rather is, you know, our risk capacity. So that's how much risk we can afford to take. You know, so that's where a lot of people, I think, make a very, very big mistake in their investment planning, is they're off investing in you know, equities or crypto, all these wonderful risky things, without having the emergency fund in place. So, you know, what happens in that case is you're investing in risky assets, and you might have a long time horizon, which is great, but you actually can't afford to take that risk, because if your tire bursts, what are you going to do? You're going to have to sell that investment to pay for the tire, which is obviously then placing you at a risk of withdrawing the money when the markets are down, for example.
So this is risk capacity. So you need to say, what risks can I afford to take?
Yeah. How you do that is it's income statement and balance sheet, right? So, I mean, do you have assets? So do you have something that you can rely on if something like your tire bursts, for example? Can you take a bit of money out of an account? Can you take a bit of money out of your bond? Can you borrow money, for example, from family? It's not what you'd like to do, but I mean, these are the kinds of questions you should be asking. And then obviously to a lesser degree, your income statement, because that's hopefully your income would be over your expenses. So you hopefully have a bit of disposable income every month. But you should ideally have an emergency fund in place, at least, you know, with a few months worth of salary before you start thinking about investing in risky assets.
You know, Paul, what I often see is it's actually people who are financially stressed who go for the risky assets, because they feel, I've always said on my website, the two biggest searches are debt consolidation and forex or crypto trading. And that sort of makes sense to me. It's people who are drawn to very high risk investments are sometimes doing it not because of who they are, their personalities, because they think that's the only way out of the mess. But actually what you're saying is that is the worst decision you could possibly make.
Exactly. And it's one of the sort of, you know, I guess not funny is not the right word, but, you know, it's one of the tragedies actually almost of investments, is that, you know, where you're actually getting your return from when you invest in risky assets, like stocks, for example, is actually your dividend. So it's the whole compound time thing, where people think it's the capital appreciation, you know, it's the stock doubling in value. It's actually not. It's more of a function of time than it is. You will always have people who have that, and that's the problem. And again, it comes to back to the shark tank, right? So there are lots of examples of people who picked crypto at the right time and made a lot of money, right? But you don't see no one is out there posting the money that they've lost. So what you're just seeing is it's a recency effect. You know, you're kind of all availability bias, where you can pick up this information because it's reported out there and you think that it's as easy as that. And it's actually not. So the actual, no one, you know, will sort of post online that they, you know, they're so happy with the compound interest they've earned over 20 years, you know, because that's not, doesn't sound really great, does it?
I mean, I have to tell you that it was actually quite funny, because someone did this last week. Somebody posted, on my timeline because she followed me, and there's a couple of the other personal finance writers saying thank you because I've been putting money away in my tax-free savings account every year, and this is what it's worth. And what was amazing was the negativity some people were people saying, oh, you're so stupid, you could have made more doing this, you could have made more doing that. And I must also tell you on Forex, I know people who are day traders and who now can live off this money, and they those are stories you hear. They usually do videos, promotional videos on YouTube.
TikTok, FinTok,
I know the people who have down a million. I know someone who's lost R1 million in Forex trading over the years. He's bankrupt. Mm. So it's exactly that. His story's not being told because no one's going to go up onto a YouTube video and warn you about these trades. So you've got on one level this kind of understand your risk capacity, how much risk you can take. Make sure you're not taking on excessive risk that's going to blow you out financially. Yeah. But then you also have risk tolerance, your personality, and that your ability to take risk, how anxious you feel about taking risk.
Yeah. So that's we've talked about personality a few times already in the podcast. So there is a piece of our DNA actually that predisposes us to either like risk or not like it. And that's what we call our risk tolerance. Now in the industry, the industry's gotten this very wrong for a number of years because they often, when they measure risk tolerance, they're actually not measuring the personality piece. They're measuring how we feel about risk in a specific point in time, right? So they're actually measuring risk perception, so how we feel about that risk. And the big problem with doing that is it's going to change. So if anyone ever gives you a scenario, a hypothetical win-loss scenario, you know that they're not testing the long-term attitude you have towards risk. They're testing how you feel about it at the moment. Because if you think about it, if someone asks you, if you have a gamble, for example, and you could win 20,000, but you could lose 5,000, how do you feel about that? That could change. You know, if you get a promotion, if you get fired, hired, those things could change often and do actually change often. So if you're measuring that at a point in time, you've just got to realize that could change. And if you align your investment strategy to that, there could be a misalignment. So the risk tolerance piece, if it's measured correctly, it's going to measure your long-term attitude towards risk. And the CFA Institute actually did a very, very good piece of research on this where they measured people's risk tolerance during and after the global financial crisis in 2008. The results were the same. So the same risk tolerance came out. People's attitudes towards stocks were the same even during a financial crisis because it was capturing their kind of their general and long-term attitude towards risk.
So is that in the questionnaire, the way the questions are asked? So give me an example of the wrong kind of questions people are asking around risk perception versus the right questions around risk tolerance.
Yeah, so it's exactly that. If you're being faced with a hypothetical win-loss scenario, so someone is saying, would you like to win 20,000, but you could lose 5,000. They're capturing how you're feeling about risk in the moment. If you're asking about someone's general attitude towards stocks, for example, or how they feel about how they feel about financial markets, their confidence in financial markets, you're getting a more psychometric kind of assessment because it's a long-term attitude that someone has built up over a period of time. So the big warning sign generally is just hypothetical win-loss scenarios, the hypothetical gambles, because it's not A, it's not your money, and B, it could change. You're not really getting a risk perception is important, but you should be matching your investment strategy to your risk tolerance. That's a piece of your personality, that your attitude.
And I think risk perception also is affected by your most recent experience. So say, for example, I did invest in Bitcoin and I made some money, it rallied. Yeah. And you said to me, how do you feel about investing in cryptocurrency? I'd say, great, I'm confident, I'm a risk taker. If it had just crashed and you said, how do you feel? I'd say, oh, no, I don't want to go there. So again, it's also about the event that's just happened that could relate to it.
Precisely. And I mean, if you say, you think about sort of people who are aggressive, the only time they're aggressive is actually after there's a market crash and they come back to you as a financial advisor and they're like, well, why did you sell me this, right? So if you're measuring this incorrectly and you're getting that kind of read of the current feel, the chances are your client at some stage is going to come back to you, which means that you're going to have to deal with an uncomfortable conversation. So risk tolerance, that's how your long-term attitude towards risk, it's important to measure that correctly.
My experience in dealing with the general public is that their risk tolerance is actually quite low. And so for a lot of people, they're very anxious about investing in equities, for example. And they'll often say, I'm worried I'm going to lose all my money. And then bizarrely enough, you'll see behavior where they'll go and invest in crypto, but that could again be the risk perception coming in, or the perhaps fear or other attributes. But generally speaking, a lot of people are anxious, don't take enough risk for what is required. And I think that brings in the third element of risk, which is make sure you understand how much risk you need to take. So how much risk for capacity is how much risk can you afford to take in terms of blowing out. But to reach your end goal, you have to take risk.
Yeah. So there's a nice way to sort of join those two together. So, I mean, I spent a lot of time, I worked for Barclays Wealth for a number of years in the wealth management space. And what always fascinated me was you'd have these people who, you know, seeing and dealing with clients, you'd have these people who've accumulated a massive amount of money, actually taking an enormous amount of risk. But when it comes to their investments, those same people were extremely risk averse. And again, it's sort of the difference there is risk perception. So those people didn't feel the risk in the, you know, the gambles that they were taking in starting these businesses were actually large, but they didn't feel it because they had a lot of knowledge, right? So there's obviously a lot of overconfidence, which is often associated with being successful, because sometimes you need it, you know, not to, you know, sometimes not judging or assessing risk correctly is actually important to actually making it, right? But I think that's the most important thing, coming back to your question, is, you know, we need to understand that although whatever we feel about risk, we also need to take risk as well to get to our investment goals. And especially when there's time involved, you know, because inflation is going to be a very, very big threat to our long-term wealth creation. So we need to understand how much risk we need to take. And again, now we've got three things that we're considering which need to be balanced, right? And often, actually, these things might not be aligned. And that is really where a financial advisor comes in to, you know, to help you sort of balance those three things.
So how would one go about looking at that? You'd first say, right, let's have a look at your risk capacity. Make sure you have the emergency fund in place. Because the minute you've got an emergency fund in place, your risk capacity is obviously improved.
Yeah.
And then you've got to say, okay, you need to take X amount of risk to reach your goals, right? You're going to have to invest in equities.
Yeah.
But is that risk, your risk tolerance, going to affect your behavior around that investment? So how is it, you know, because I think that's one of the challenges, and we've spoken about this behavior tax as well, that if you are not, if your risk tolerance is not aligned to your risk, to your portfolio, you will land up switching and cashing in. And so how do you put all of these things together, especially as a financial planner, or just somebody listening now saying, I want to put together an investment that makes sense that I'll be able to stay with?
Yeah. So, I mean, look, that's obviously where a financial advisor is so valuable, right? So, I mean, what the financial advisor is paid for really is, what should be, is these kind of discussions, as opposed to trying to pick the next best winning, you know, kind of. So that's more of an asset allocation thing. We've spoken about that already. But it's such an important role, this discussion. So you're quite right. So risk capacity is always your first one, right? If you can't, it doesn't matter how much risk you need to take, if you can't afford to take it because you don't have that structure or emergency fund, or, you know, you don't have that backup in place. And of course, what does it mean? You know, does it mean if your portfolio is down by 20%, does it mean you can't pay school fees, or does it mean that you have to delay a luxury holiday by a year? Those are two very different scenarios. So that's going to affect your risk capacity. So your risk capacity is it's sort of like almost like a catch-all. So you need to make sure that you have enough risk capacity.
That's
first.
Where you start.
That's where you start. Yeah. So I have the capacity now to take risk. Okay, great. Let's look at how much I need to take. And if I need to take, for example, a inflation plus 5 portfolio, which is equities, how do I feel about that? And what is my long-term attitude towards that? If those things are not aligned, then perhaps you can look at a plan, for example, but the advisor here has to then make a decision. And you as the clients have got to make a decision where you're probably not going to like the journey, which means that I'm going to need to engage with you a little bit more to manage the feeling, right? Now, the feeling is one we haven't spoken about yet, because along the journey, how you feel is going to go up and down and up and down, you know. So sometimes investing in stocks is going to feel like crypto. Sometimes investing in cash is going to feel like crypto. You know, sometimes things are going to feel more risky. Sometimes they're going to feel less risky. You know, sometimes feeling, you know, investing in stocks is going to feel like a fixed deposit. You know, you're just going to feel like you can make no mistakes because the market's just going up. But you've got to again remain kind of calm and stick with the plan. And that's why the plan is so important. So the financial advisor's job in this case is to get you into a position where those three things are aligned, and then to manage your behavior along the way to make sure that you're getting to that goal.
What role does financial education and your own knowledge of money affect your risk tolerance? And I mean, we're going to go on and talk about money profiles in our next podcast, because that was picked up in mine. I have an anxiety about money, but my money, my financial knowledge overrides that. So how does that, do you think that that can change your risk tolerance? In other words, people who are more educated on investments tend to, can tolerate risk.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. So there's been plenty of research to show that, you know, the more, and subjective knowledge, by the way, is fine. So even if you just think that you know more, that provides a very good shield against, you know, against things like switching, for example, out of, because you feel like you understand the environment a bit more, and because you feel like you understand it. Actually, whether you do or not doesn't matter. The fact that you feel you understand it means that you are more confident in, you know, in the plan, if we can call it that. You know, if you, so whether it's subjective, in other words, how I feel, I think I understand markets, or objective, I have a, you know, I have a degree, or I have a, you know, kind of X amount of trading years behind me. It doesn't matter. That definitely provides a shield in terms of your of the correct money behaviors, like staying the course of a plan. So it gives you a little bit of shielding. And I think that's a very, very important thing to assess when you look at things like a money fingerprint, or try and predict someone's behavior. You know, getting a good idea of how much experience they have is good. And in actual fact, if you look at some stockbroking you know, propositions, they have this interesting concept of, you know, almost like flight hours. So they won't let you invest in the most aggressive or risky things until you've got a certain amount of trading hours under your belt, you know, almost like a pilot, which I think is a very interesting concept to because what they want is, they don't want people to blow out. And that's what you were speaking about in capacity, right? Because what happens is, if you lose a lot of money quickly, or you realize that loss quickly, you close your account. So they're trying to give you that shield. But again, it's the knowledge aspect. Let's try and get you used to markets, the ups and downs, and the more you the more kind of experience you have, the more resilient you are.
Although I have to just comment, I mentioned earlier, I know somebody's lost a huge amount of money on Forex, and he started off, you know, he said he started off buying exchange traded funds, learning about them, then he went on to buying individual shares and learning about them, and then he felt he was ready to trade Forex. But I think some of those, especially Forex, something like trading Forex or even crypto, has a slight addiction element. And I think you, again, it comes back to the plan. If I'm going into something this volatile, that can also have this massive dopamine high. And I think we, you know, I don't think equities ever move sufficiently enough to give you the dopamine high that Forex trading or crypto trading can, because those massive returns in a short period of time can really hit that dopamine level. So do you think there's an element of addiction that comes in sometimes as
most
well?
Most definitely. I mean, so if you look at sort of the Robin Hoods, for example, I mean, there was a case last year or 2 years ago where someone committed suicide because it was a kid. I mean, the kid was 21, 22 years old, you know, who pretty much leveraged himself in buying these, you know, derivative products on the equity market and geared himself $25,000 in the red. And pretty much, you know, the rest is history. But there's definitely, I mean, the thing about that as well is, we're going to talk about money fingerprint, but this whole, it's this expressive benefit that people get, right? So they attribute success to themselves. They don't, so it's kind of heads as skill and tails as bad luck. And there's definitely a piece of our personality that kind of fuels that. And that's, you know, the extroverts out there generally have quite a strong external locus of control. So they're kind of, they have this thing of, you know, the world is something that can't be changed, and it kind of almost, the world affects them. So they don't look at their own responsibility in a disaster. They'll be like, oh, that's just the way the world works, kind of thing, right? So it's kind of a shield against, again, these kind of bad things that happen. But when good things happen, they attribute that to a sense of skill, which of course if you look at the amount of time a lot of these people are actually putting in before they're making decisions, I mean, there's very little skill involved. You know, and that's always the interesting thing, is a lot of these providers, I mean, they're actually selling the software package. Right? I mean, if they knew anything that anyone else didn't, they wouldn't be selling that software package. They'd be sitting in a dark corner somewhere printing money. So yes, that's the way the world works.
Oh, Paul, I'm on your page, and I struggle with this. I struggle to get this through to people. It's really changing. And I really, in our final podcast that we're going to record next, we definitely need to unpack your money personality, your money fingerprint, things like being an introvert, extrovert. We're going to cover all of that. And I think that that's very, very powerful. But to sum up today, it's really, really important to understand your own personal risk tolerance versus what you need, the risks you need to take long term to meet your financial goals. So I think that's really important. Thank you, Paul.
Cool.